From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 20th day of December, 2024. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And a bit later in the program, we'll hear from Eric Snodgrass of Conduit Ag. He's a meteorologist and will talk us through what the weather forecast looks like through Christmas here in the United States and the growing region field. Like down in South America. Really, really good, by the way. And then if you can stay with us for the second half hour today, and even in the first half hour, you'll hear a portion of our Commodity Week program we recorded last week at the Farm Assets Conference. The Outlook panel, including Joe Jansen, Brian Stark, Colin Waters, and Matt Bennett, all on this Friday afternoon. You'll hear a portion of that during the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world online on demand at WILLAG.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn for the day settled at $4.46 1/4. It was up 5.5. The May at 4.51 3/4, 5.5 higher. In December, futures 3 cents higher, finished at $4.37 3/4. January soybeans 9.74 1/2, 11.5 cents higher. The March up 12 3/4, finished at 9.79 1/4. And November beans at 9.87 1/4, up 10.5 cents. Bean meal $10.40 higher, finished at $2.94.50 on the settlement price for the January. The bean oil 53 cents lower at $39.48. Wheat futures soft red unchanged at $5.33. Then in the March, the hard red March at $5.44 3/4, up a penny and a half for the day. Live cattle futures at $188.40, $1.85 higher for 100 pounds. The feeders at $255.82 1/2 in the March, up $1.25. And lean hogs $2.30 higher at $85.92 1/2 for the day. Mike Zuzulo is now here from GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us on this Friday before our big holiday week.
Yeah, I was a little nervous to be on with you this Friday, Todd, given the early part of the trading week, but we really turned things around, so I'm happy to be with you again.
Yeah, picked up most of the gains that we lost on, or maybe all of them, I really haven't looked, in the soybeans that we lost on Wednesday. Not all for the week, I don't think, but we're doing lots better than expected, I guess.
Yeah, and you know, to put it in the framework of what we've seen this week so far, we have gone from a 6-year low in the soy meal futures on a lead month basis to a new monthly high. And so we literally, you know, Wednesday afternoon, Thursday morning, we're trading the lowest since 2016 when it came to the lead month soy meal futures. And so that was really, I think, the heart and soul of what drove the recovery. You know, you could feel it, that the corn market kind of wanted to stay strong and wanted to go higher, but it was starting to get pulled down by the beans and had no support from the wheat. So I really like the fact that the meal was the catalyst for the recovery, because that's our feed play and the better side of the spreads. If you're going to choose one over the other of the product markets, it's the best one for me. You know, obviously, I don't think most of this would have happened in the meal market had we continued to see new record lows in the Brazilian real, because that was really the major 800-pound gorilla sitting on top of this market until we finally got the Federal Reserve update, and then we got the inflation data on Friday morning.
Yeah, so we haven't talked much about that this week. Federal Reserve dropping the overnight rate by 0.25 point again, although they're saying in the next year, rather than 4 rate drops, they'll probably look at 2. And I think they raised the interest baseline to 2.5%, or the goal, too.
Right.
So how do you work all of that in?
Well, look, we had a 23-month high, a fresh 23-month high in the U.S. dollar, and that was put in after the Federal Reserve got done with their press conference. And so it was, they clearly in the trade, I think in the markets, had been expecting the Fed to pull back on their interest rate cuts. That means that the Fed is still too worried about inflation. That means that bond yields would go higher again. And that means that the dollar would be attractive to the investors around the world. And I want to say that China had record outflows of capital in the month of November, And, you know, we're talking about China having bond yields. Some of their bond yields right now are the lowest since the financial crisis, going all the way back to 2008, 2009. So it was really important that we change direction on Friday with the inflation data coming out a little bit cooler. And that gave the market the idea of maybe the Fed won't have to be as hawkish as it has turned out to be and go back to be maybe a little bit more dovish and want to cut rates a little bit more. But to me, in 2025, Todd, to boil everything down, if we really want a trend change and to get back on the demand horse instead of the weather supply horse, we've got to have a weak dollar, strong copper, strong crude, and strong wheat. And then that tends to give everybody else a rising tide lifts all boats historically.
Any of those things in the offing?
It's too hard to say because of the shutdown potential. I think the weakness in the dollar on Friday was partially due to the fact that we probably are going to shut down on Friday afternoon. So it's just too hard to say with these next couple weeks and the transition of the administrations. But I think that one thing I will say, I've always felt like even during the holidays, the currency markets really never shut down because they trade $5 to $7 trillion a day or in a 24-hour time period. So I would expect the currency markets to kind of show us what the overall market is looking at over the holiday time period. But good meal market, get a good wheat market underneath us with a weaker dollar, and we might be able to still pull a rabbit out of the hat and get some upside potential.
It'll be interesting to see if there's a shutdown. Congress won't be sworn in until January 3rd, how quickly they can work after that and what that actually means, because of, you know, all next week would be shut down, or a lot of it. What that means for the January reports from USDA, actually.
Yeah, that's a big feature. I mean, we haven't talked weather yet, and I think one of the things about the meal market was also not just fund short covering after driving prices so hard and that change in the currency. I really do think it had to do with the Argentine weather not being nearly as good, not nearly as strong in terms of precip this second half of December as the market was expecting. And I think the trade just lost sight of the fact that we're right around the corner to the final report and maybe another yield reduction. But what if we don't get that? And that's, again, that's where we're going to have to rely upon those outside macro markets, unfortunately, a lot more than we want to, instead of supply-demand fundamentals.
Indeed, a lot of what-ifs. So if we don't get that, we won't see what the U.S. final yield numbers are. And you're also suggesting in that same point that if the World Ag Outlook Board were to make an adjustment in Argentina, it might show up then, too. So the lots going on in those reports January 10th, so we'll have to keep track of those. What do you think about the war in Ukraine and the Middle East and what those things might mean for the 2025 year?
Yeah, again, a very strong currency play as far as the changing of the guard in the United States. And, you know, one thing I will say, going back on what we were talking about a minute ago, Todd, was I really do get the sense right now that what we've seen is that the corn market wanted to go by itself, but we've got a weak corn spread now down in the 80-cent level. I think corn is going to have a really tough time without the help of beans or meal or wheat, especially going any higher, especially in the cash market, as we get ready for the new administration, as we deal with Ukraine and the Middle East. So it might be one of those times where we look at offloading some cash bushels and maybe buy back on paper and look at it from that standpoint, because I'm skeptical that the basis can continue to work its way up as the futures goes higher, like we've been able to see this past couple months.
That'll be interesting to watch for corn. It is one of the few bright spots, I suppose, in the commodities at this point, bean meal too, this week at least, I suppose. What else are you watching?
Probably the biggest thing to watch, other than what we've talked about, is we got a lot of meat reports. We're coming into 2025 with funds very long in the meat. So cattle on feed report Friday, and then we get hogs and pigs in cold storage. I'm very nervous that with the weakness in the stock market as of late, those longs and the funds might want to switch positions somewhere in 2025. So that's something to really look at in the big picture, especially between now and spring.
Hey, you have a great holiday week. We'll talk with you in the new year.
You too, Todd. Thanks, and Merry Christmas to you and all the great people at WILL.
Merry Christmas to you as well, Mike. That's Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. On this Friday, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. We're joined by Eric Snodgrass. He's at Conduit Ag. Hey, thanks, Eric. And thanks for being with us last Friday at the Farm Assets Conference. That was a blast. And for those who were there, they got a really good look at what you're thinking about for next summer.
It's just odd, Todd, because I should be very reserved in giving a summer forecast in December, right? I mean, that is what 20 years of training of forecasting would tell me. But, you know, until this evidence overturns that, I think we have just risk going into next year. And we got the new CPC update that just came in yesterday, and it kind of confirms, although it's a different story, Todd. This is interesting. So let's just skip over the near term and go right to next summer. Why not? So they have, in their new forecast, drought building out of the Canadian prairie into parts of Montana, stretching into the Dakotas, Nebraska, and Iowa, encroaching in on Illinois. And what's interesting about that is I have it coming up from Mexico, coming through the southern plains and hitting us from the south. And I think what's interesting is either way, there's drought trying to move its way toward us next year, given the fact we have this La Nina, which will likely reach a peak in the next 3 or 4 weeks and start to fade. And also just given our inadequate soil moisture. I mean, even with the snow that just came in and with some of the recent precip we've gotten here, you go down pretty far. I mean, I talked to a guy the other day that just was digging some post holes. He's like, yeah, I got down there 4 inches. We were okay. And then I just got into powder as soon as I got down any farther. And that kind of longer term dryness in the kind of the depth of the soil just has me concerned for next year. And that's what I shared on Friday. And it was an absolute blast. Great crowd. Loved having the students up front. They were engaged, which makes it a whole lot more fun for me.
You know, that was funny because we knew we would have prospective students up in the audience. And when they got there, I asked them to sit up front in the very first row, which probably did not make them very happy. But there was a reason behind that, because I knew that if they were in the front row that I could pull tables from the front row around in front of them eventually. And they sat with the professors during the lunch hour, which
awesome.
So I'm hopeful that works really well. Now, hopeful too that we will have a great Christmas. What is our near-term forecast in the United States?
Yeah, so there's been a major issue with this pattern, right? Did you see where the snow came from just yesterday into this morning? It came out of the Canadian prairie. It zipped at us toward the north and west. And every time we have flow out of the north and west, all we get are clippers. And clippers just don't have the deep draw on Gulf of Mexico moisture. So this is why we're still, even though there's snow on the ground right now on Friday midday, there's just not much water in this snow, and it's not going to be able to be used very much. And while we've got a couple of cold days ahead of us, we are going to warm back up significantly to finish out this year. And that may bleed over into the first 5-6 days of January. I'm not sure on when the pattern's going to flip, but I'll just tell you this. Historically, in winter, when you see the jet extending like it's doing from Japan, and you get this big blob of just warm conditions across eastern half of North America, there's almost like a, I don't know, an overshooting that happens when the atmosphere tries to return back to, you know, maybe more of a equilibrium state, which it's always trying to do. But it overshoots, and instead we, you know, build a bunch of warm air into Alaska and shove all that cold air here. And so I think a lot of us are trying to figure out the timing of that. When that cold air comes through, but it'll be in January. It's not coming before the end of this year. So Christmas forecast, unfortunately, we have some moisture that's trying to get around this area, 23rd, 24th, 25th, 26th. But the timing of it, it's a mess. I cannot, the models are all over the place on the timing because it's a weak system. So I don't have that really great Christmas Day forecast for you. All I can tell you is it's going to be a warm one, especially with the overnight lows. They're going to be pumping up there, keeping things pretty mild. But hey, that's good for travel. And sometimes those kind of travel mercies are what we need.
Indeed, they are. South America at this point, really looking good.
I mean, I can't find a problem. I mean, this week, Monday, I was looking at the newest NDVI data. And I mean, it's new record high. So it outdid the last 23 years in terms of how good this crop looks from space in terms of plant health. And then I look for drought by looking at some of the new satellite-based drought indicators. And it's in these interior sections of Goiás and Tocantins. And these are not the main producing areas. Southern Goiás, sure. But the northern part, no. And so you look at these areas where there's drought, and then you see the forecast, which is trying to fill it in. And even though it's a little drier in Argentina, they just had great rains come through. So the problem here is I'm looking for a problem and I can't find one in Brazil, which likely means they're going to continue to have a great looking crop. I just say this about Brazil. Maybe we get a problem with them by staying this wet for too long into January and early February when they're going to be trying to harvest these soybeans. Because if they stay green and stay wet, it's a massive challenge to try to get that crop out. But these Brazilian growers are used to that, so I know they have strategies around it. So we'll just have to watch to see what this crop comes out looking like. But all signs, I'd just say, indicate a pretty healthy crop.
Hey, thanks much, and we look forward to talking with you in the new year.
All right, sounds good, Todd.
Eric Snodgrass is with Conduit Ag, joins us here on the Closing Market Report every Friday afternoon. It comes to you from Illinois Public Medium. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Up next, we'll hear a portion of a Commodity Week program, actually the Market Outlook panel, recorded last week at the Farm Assets Conference that took place right here in Champaign County. Our guests for that panel included Brian Stark, Joe Jansen, Matt Bennett, and Colin Waters. You can hear the whole of the program right now online, in fact, in our Commodity Week segment. And all of it, nearly the full hour, will air next Friday during this 2 o'clock hour. But you can hear a portion of it yet this afternoon as well. If you can stay with us for the whole hour, a good large portion of it. If not, you can still find again it up online at willag.org, and many of these radio stations will carry it over the weekend. Commodity Week is next.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Today, we'll return to the Farm Assets Conference held the 13th day of December in Champaign at the iHotel, where our panel of analysts for the Outlook program included Joe Jansen, University of Illinois agricultural economist, Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net, Brian Stark of the Andersons, and Colin Waters of the Illinois Corn Growers Association. We'll begin with Joe Jansen. He laid out what the current supply and demand situation looked like and some outlook for the 2025 growing season.
Yeah, I'll try and set the table briefly. I know we're at the end of a long day. I appreciate you all being here. At the end of all of this, we get down to kind of brass tacks, which is just what's the price of corn and beans? And those two numbers kind of really make the world go round in this part of the world. So we're going to sort of talk a little bit about what's been happening in corn and bean markets and kind of both on the old crop and new crop side, where we think things, how things sort of set up as we move into 2025. So I was just making this point to Brian just a second ago. The good news is on this slide. It's kind of hard to see. But we've kind of, after a period of declining prices for both corn and soybeans, the good news is we've got back to something that's better than we've seen, which is $4.50 corn on the board. The March 2025 corn contract now is right around, or maybe today just a little bit less than $4.50 a bushel. That's the good news, which means that there's maybe not a ton of good news in this picture. The other on the bean side, the current nearby soybean futures price right around $10 a bushel. That's sort of setting up to say that beans have kind of hung in there pretty well given a lot of bearish news I've seen. So the big driver here, obviously, in the last year has been the big crop that we harvested this last year in the United States, coming on the back of relatively good production out of South America. Joanna Calusi, my colleague, talked a bunch about that already, so I won't delve too deeply into that. But what is this? I think it's really Matt and I have been up on this panel for a couple of years now, talking about how this is where we tend to go in these markets, is towards kind of these long run lower price levels. You say $10 corn for $10 soybeans and $4 corn is kind of long run ballpark numbers where this market tends to hang out when it's reasonably well supplied, and I think that's the state that we exist in now. I do want to talk a little bit about what this means for marketing, say, old crop corn and soybeans. Just thinking a little bit about what the market is offering in terms of, you know, pricing grain now versus pricing grain later in this marketing year before we get to that next harvest. So this just shows futures carry, the difference between summertime futures and the nearby March futures for both beans and corn. The market offering a pretty reasonable amount of carry, 21 cents per bushel to carry grain between March and July. The carries in the corn market, there was maybe some opportunity to market grain for delivery later in the year. And the market has really said, you know, we're prioritizing moving some of this grain to market now. And I think that's on the basis of a lot of the export business that we've seen on the corn side, particularly moving corn to parts of Latin America. And we'll talk about what's been developing there. But that's sort of the state of play, how we've got to where we're at. As we go forward, the biggest thing, the biggest sort of unknowns, I think, are on the usage side in terms of old crop corn and soybeans. How does that demand picture play out as we go through the second half of the marketing year here, going into 2025? And it's important to sort of keep things sort of in proportion. How big are they, sort of three big pieces of demand for both corn and beans? I think I sort of break this down as kind of a three-legged stool upon which all of our demand picture stands. One piece being biofuels, that's the dark red slices of these pies. The second piece being domestic feed demand, the green slices. For corn, that's what's labeled as feed. For soybeans, what we think of as domestic meal production, much of which, not all of which, but a significant portion of which is being fed to livestock here in the United States. And then the yellow slices being exports. And I'm going to spend, I think, probably most of the limited time that I'm going to take talking about that export piece, in part because the other big pieces tend to be relatively stable year over year. And when we get into a period like we're in right now, where prices are slightly lower, it's that export piece that really is the slack adjuster in sort of the global supply and demand system. Even though exports is a relatively limited share for corn, it's significant enough that it's going to have to pick up some of the slack. When we get down into low prices, we've got to kind of bring some of that export demand to kind of stop this thing from going lower. And so what's going on in export markets is really key as we go forward through the rest of this marketing year.
Joe Jansen is an agricultural economist at the University of Illinois. Joined us at the Farm Assets Conference held Friday, the 13th day of December. That was last week. On the Outlook panel, along with Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net, Brian Stark of the Andersons, and Colin Waters with the Illinois Corn Growers Association. You can hear all of that program up online now, on demand, anytime you'd like, in the Commodity Week links there at WILLAG.org or in the Commodity Week podcast. It's about a 54-minute program. You'll hear a portion of that if you can stay with us for the rest of the hour. Yet today, or again online now, and many of these radio stations will carry it over the weekend as well. You've been, of course, listening to the Closing Market Report. It does come to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.